Welcome, everybody, to The Lonely TARDIS, your journey through Time Lords and space. We are on episode, season 2, episode 13. Somewhere, I'm going to say episode one more time, because we're going to be covering the episodes this week of the Journey to the Center of the TARDIS and the Crimson Horror. We first of all want to apologize for missing last week. Our schedules did not coordinate. Steven was Steven, which means he was available. Dolly was not always available because there is much hockey to be watched. Uh-huh. And good old-fashioned Sean was on the ice world. He was fighting the snowmen and the ice people. But we're back. I am Dolly Domofsky, of course. Joining me as usual, Sean Norton.
Hello.
And Steven Strum.
Hi. If Sean can eat on a podcast, I can eat on a podcast too.
I'm not eating anything. What are you doing? Dude, this is so unprofessional. I mean, seriously, we do this once a week. Keep the grub out of your mouth for an hour. That's all I ask.
And by grub, he means actual grubs.
Yeah.
Hakuna Matata.
Exactly. All right. Well, we got a lot to talk about this week, people. We're going to dive right into it. We have two episodes to cover. I mentioned it just a moment ago. We do have much to say about these episodes, which is really interesting because I think we all kind of had the same vibe going forward. But let's get into the first episode that we missed, Journey to the Center of the TARDIS. This was last week's episode. And I'm going to do the ultra quick recap, which is the Doctor and Clara are making plans to fly off somewhere. Meanwhile, the TARDIS gets, attached to a tractor beam or magnet beam or whatever, and gets sucked onto a salvage ship. By getting sucked onto the salvage ship, Clara gets thrown into the TARDIS somewhere, and the Doctor pops out and bumps into three gentlemen who are salvage engineers. I don't know what they're called.
Salvagers.
Yeah, salvagers didn't really sound all that impressive. Salvagers. And so he tricks them essentially into following him into the TARDIS to find Clara. They search and search and search. And meanwhile, they're being chased by these burnt monster things, because there's always going to be some type of monster or alien in Doctor Who. And this time they're these burnt beasts. And they catch up to Clara in the center of the TARDIS, which is a there's basically a black hole or a what kind of was it like a star ready to explode, perpetually ready to explode, before it hits the supernova, I guess. And so
it's caught in the middle of its explosion.
There you go. And remember, the TARDIS is bigger on the inside than it is on the outside, so it can fit an entire star on the inside. And what that means also is that time and space are warped around it, which gives the TARDIS its power, supposedly. And because of that, because the TARDIS has kind of lost its way at the moment, the burnt creatures that we're seeing are actually future versions of the Doctor and Clara and the Salvagers and so forth. And so, long story short, the Doctor manages to zoom himself into the past and meet past Doctor Matt Smith, past number 11, throw him the big friendly button, which is a little device that the Doctor pushes, and everything's okay, and they're back to normal, and we live happily ever after. That's basically it. And if it sounds preposterous, it's because I'm going to say it. It was pretty effing preposterous. This was my least favorite episode of the season. In fact, I'm going to take favorite off of there. This is the episode I least liked this season, and could have done without. And I'm blatant in saying it. I mean, what do you guys think? Did you guys like this episode first and foremost, or no?
No, I guess that's the answer.
I don't think
it's the. I'm having trouble deciding if I think it's worse. If it's the worst one this season, but. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to, right now, but it's kind of a toss up in my mind between Rings of Akaten and this one. But God, I'm probably going to give the nod to this one. This one is not, it was just not my favorite.
I I think this one loses a lot of points because it should have been so much better.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Should have been so much more.
You know, and what... Right, exactly. And what should have been this amazing in-depth nod to the series, like, what was it, last season, The Doctor's Wife?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That's exactly the kind of caliber episode this should have been, going to the center of the TARDIS, which is something we've never done before. And instead, we just get little nods to this and that. Like, it was really cool to see the Eye of Harmony.
Yeah,
and,
finally, you know, after hearing about it.
Power supply and everything. That was awesome. But...
That was kind of the only awesome part.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it started strong enough, you know, it was a little contrived, like, oh, let me put the shields down for 1 second. Oh, crap, attack. But that's fine, because that's, you know, that's very Doctor Who-y, but...
This episode was some hooey, I'll agree with you there.
And you know what, I it took a while, I could even... reconcile the fact that there were monsters inside the TARDIS chasing them around. That's fine too, because like you said, you kind of have to have them. But the ending,
yeah, oh my lord,
the
oh,
ending wow. just ruins everything that came before it, everything, and it literally did it with a big reset button. Mm-hmm. There was literally a reset button, which is the worst trope ever. And then they made one, and they said, "Here you go, press this," and they broke every rule they've established. Yeah, doesn't matter. I agree with you guys. I think this is the biggest letdown in some time.
So here are some of the things that I noted that were kind of worthwhile, that were at least worthwhile from a knowledge standpoint and continuity thing. First of all, the ship is infinite on the inside. I think the Doctor mentions after the salvagers ask him how big is it, he says it's infinite. Which is kind of odd. At the same time, it's interesting because it is kind of, I mean, it's basically its own dimension, right? So on the inside, we find all this history of the Doctor. It's like he kind of keeps a museum of himself. We have, I mean, there's a giant lab that he has in there. There's that really poorly CGI rendered pool.
God.
There's the giant library that's inside there, which, by the way, in the middle of the library is the history of the Time War. And if you open, I think Clara opens a page, a random page, and of course the Doctor's name is on that page. Doctor's real name.
Yeah, I really like how this super secret thing is right in the middle of the library every one of his companions can, you know, walk through at any given time.
Exactly. And when she opens it, she says, "Huh, so that's who." And that's basically all we get. So that's who?
Oh,
come
wow.
on. That was
Fuck
horrible.
You.
And we also see the telescope. And I believe this, maybe I'm wrong, but this looks at the telescope from the old Torchwood days. Right? Remember the telescope in the mansion?
The Victorian mansion. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think...
original Torchwood.
The original
manor.
Torchwood.
Well, there were a lot of cool nods. I mean, I will give the episode credit. They did, you know, we can list them or we can just talk about them in general, but...
Sure, go
but
ahead.
There was some, yeah. So okay, okay. Well, we got the Eye of Harmony, right, mm-hmm. which we talked about. There were audio clips from a variety of older episodes, including the New Who and Old Who.
Mm-hmm.
What else? There was the cot, which we saw in A Good Man Goes to War.
Yeah.
Amy Pond's toy TARDIS, that little kind of box she built or whatever, arts and crafty. The magnifying glass, which could have been from. You know, the Donna Noble stories or the Power of Three or whatever. The umbrella, which is linked to a Seventh Doctor story.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen's favorite swimming pool. I mean, it was nice to see it. I mean, you know, they've talked about it so often since Eleven showed up that it was. I don't have a problem with that kind of nod. And you know, I don't know why it looked so weird, but that's okay.
Don't you feel, though, that all of this stuff was just pandering?
Just shoehorned in there.
It's like, we're finally going to get to see the swimming pool because she's literally going to run past an open door where she sees the swimming pool. It's like they just had a checklist of things that they wanted to show, and then they literally just, okay, we've shown it. It doesn't factor into the plot in any way. We're just showing you this because you wanted to see it. There's like, she never... goes into the swimming pool to try and escape the fire monsters. She never tries to use anything, any of these interesting things in any way in the plot.
It's all style and no substance, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. Exactly.
The whole episode is that way.
And you know what this makes me worried about?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh, the 50th. The
same thing that you're always worried about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But that ending, right?
Yeah.
Well, like, if you had all these nods and the story was just so-so and whatever, and there were these creatures, like, let's do a little fanfic rewrite here, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
On the fly, I haven't thought about this at all. But let's say that the TARDIS gets somehow overrun or captured and the shields are down or whatever, and suddenly there's, like, this interdimensional rift or whatever because it's so powerful and the engines are wonky. And suddenly you have these monsters that should have never been there, either from the future, the past, another dimension, whatever. And they're on the hunt, but they're actually, you know, in true Doctor Who form. They're scared or they're, you know, they think they're on the defensive or whatever. And then the episode ends because the Doctor has to do his Doctory thing. And he finds out something about Clara and then everybody is happy and he returns the monsters to whatever and the TARDIS is happy. Yay. That's fine, right? Mm-hmm, I mean, granted, mm-hmm. It's not going to blow your socks off, but it's not the Doctor reaching back, talking to his past self, altering his timeline, and then hitting the magic
right button. God. And so, how often do they talk about the Doctor not bumping into himself?
You can't cross your own timeline.
Oh my. It's like, so there was a great article you pointed out to me on, was it IO9 that hosted it? And it talked about how this episode, they basically turned time travel into magic. And kudos to the guys whoever it was that reviewed it, because that's basically what they did. They invented, time travel on the fly here. And what the rules of time travel are, there was, you know, one of the things that always seemed, that was always great about Doctor Who is that the laws of time travel actually seem somewhat cemented into some type of believable physics, you know, like, oh, you can't cross because you'll affect time and things will happen. In the case of this episode, it was, we don't care. We're going to have the Doctor helping himself by jumping into that same rift that sucked up Amy and Rory, their time, you know, all the issues there. It's like, come on.
It's like, I mean, the one thing that you always got to deal with when you deal with time travel and time travel fiction and mm-hmm. all of this stuff. I mean, obviously not real time travel, so I guess fiction is redundant, but... you have to – every good time travel story has to set its own rules for time travel
right.
and then follow those rules. Looper did it. Mm-hmm. They said, okay, these are the rules of this – of how time travel works in this universe. Obviously, it's all silly because it's fucking time travel. It's not real. But when you set up the way you get around that is you set up a fiction and you follow the rules of your own fiction, and then I will believe – that you can do things within the rules of your own fiction. But when you just make up rules to your own fiction on the fly, you become lost. And Lost.
Right. Correct.
Like the last season of Lost gets maligned so often because the last season of Lost is literally just we're making shit up as we go along. We don't know what rules matter anymore. And Doctor Who is doing that, but thinks it can get away with it but with charm.
Mm.
And granted, that makes it more a little bit more palatable just because – but – it made it a little bit more palatable the first, you know, three or four times they've done it, and they just keep on doing it again and again and again. Wibbly wobbly timey wimey is not a valid excuse anymore.
Yes, thank you. it's not that the Doctor was ever meant to be believable, but there was some air of, like I said, there was some air of really cool modern science fiction that. That had its own laws, right? Like you said, like you and Sean mentioned, there were laws that it abided by, whether it was from season to season or if it was the full stretch of Doctor Who, it at least would be able to follow those laws, and it totally seemed to wipe it away here. Just to serve, this was, let me phrase it this way, this was an episode that, like Sean kind of alluded to, would have been the best fanfic on the planet had they pulled it off. But
it didn't have to be fanfic, though. It didn't. It absolutely didn't have to do anything. It could have served so many. All it had to do was be half as good as last season's TARDIS episode. Yeah. Half as good, and it would have been okay. It even would have been great.
I still, and that was actually something I had a problem with. Mm-hmm. The Doctor's wife, and I don't remember if we talked about it last season, but. And it was that in The Doctor's Wife, I had been asking for a Let's Go Inside the TARDIS episode mm-hmm. for basically since I've started watching Doctor Who. And in The Doctor's Wife is a great episode overall, but the stuff inside the actual TARDIS to me is kind of boring because 99% of it takes place in hallways. And this same, yeah, this yeah. is this is kind of exactly the same. Again, it's just you're on this roller coaster ride, or like this, it's a small world ride of things just popping up around you and not having any, like you said, Sean, any substance to it or whatever by the end. And then they literally say at the end, okay, ride's over. You were never in any real danger at any time. Nobody was. The doctor wasn't. So let's just reset. The train car or the roller coaster car comes back to is rolling back into station. Everybody hop off because that's the end of it. And nothing has changed and nothing is different. You just saw a bunch of cardboardy stuff that didn't really do anything. It hasn't changed you or anything around it. The episode didn't change anything. Like literally, the whole purpose of the history of the Time War and all this stuff was to jazz people up for, look at all the things that we can explore and change and everything. But they don't explore anything. They just like show fucking flashcards of things that you maybe remember.
If this was the 50th anniversary episode.
Christ. Don't do that because you're gonna give Sean a heart attack.
Well, every week I die a little more inside, and it's okay, and I keep that in check. But no, like it's almost like they said in the meeting room, in the writers' room, they were like, "Hey, we want to go inside the TARDIS." Okay, done. Here's this awesome plot, and then we'll build it out. Okay, done. It's like no, here we're going in the TARDIS. Here's what we're gonna do. And then they just started throwing shit at like a sticky board and like, oh, swimming pool, gotta have that. Oh, so here's
monsters. What are our monsters gonna be? Yeah.
Right, here's the overarching theme. Okay, well, that's fine because we're hinting at the fields of Drendalore or fields of gold or whatever the hell it is. Okay, so, that's fine. And oh, well, we gotta have the monsters. Well, how about these badass people that were burned alive? Okay, and they're trapped in time. That sounds awesome. Blah, 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 blah. Poorly fleshed out brothers that kind of sort of are selfish. That's fine too. Yada, yada, yada. Okay, we kind of got a story. How do we want to end this? Well, shit. Okay. let's just have the Doctor wave his magic wand through a rift in time and space and then help himself at the end. And no one in the room's heads were like, wait a minute. That's awful. They're like, oh, shit. Brilliant. Okay, tea for everybody. Let's wrap. And it's just
tea for everybody.
And it's just so bad. It's just so bad, and it doesn't – there's no signs whatsoever that they had something they wanted to do like coherently from the beginning, the middle, and the end. This just reeks of – story, like not even story of the week. It just reeks of like – what is the word I'm trying to think of? The worst kind of fan service. Like
pandering.
And that ending is such a giant middle finger to just every hardcore Who fan. It's a giant middle finger. It's like, ha. We do what we want, and you're going to come back every week anyway.
Because like I said, they think they can get away with whatever they want because our character is charming, and you love him and everything. And, you know, like you were saying about fan fiction, you know, as long as we were on that subject, what I thought this was going to be coming in was I thought, okay, what we're going to have here is we're going to have, like, a weird sort of Doctor versus the Sinister Six because we're going to find out that all the weird things that the Doctor has fought over the years and he's trapped so many of them inside of the TARDIS, and now that the TARDIS has been depowered, some of them have escaped, and now we've got to deal with a bunch of the classic Doctor Who villains. And I think it was another missed opportunity to do what you really want, Sean, which is to go dig back into the deep old Doctor Who stuff.
You wouldn't even have to do the weird, like, you wouldn't even have to do the weird Superman Fortress of Solitude thing, right? Where he's got the old specimens and stuff.
Right.
The TARDIS has a black hole in it. If the tiniest thing malfunctions, why not just have echoes of some of his greatest battles or greatest enemies, right?
Sure.
And then like it looks like they're gonna, and you could even progress it. Like in the beginning, they're gonna get cornered. Oh god, what's gonna happen? And then they fade away, and they're like, oh, that's just a spectral image. That's not so bad. And then let's say a Zygon, Zord, whatever, Dalek rolls in, and they're
Suntar,
like, oh,
whatever.
Suntar, right? Sure. Yeah, that's fine. We're not scared of you. This doesn't matter. You're not real. But then they shoot and miss, and it's like, the destabilization's bringing them through. Now they're material, and you've got progression up until this big climax where they have to fix the TARDIS or fix whatever is wrong with it. There's just so many – oh, God. There's so many better ways you could do this, and these aren't even great ideas. This is just a bunch of dudes sitting around computers just shooting it. I'm not even thinking about it.
We watch TV for a living. we just watch TV, and like these are our ideas that just you know, granted, like you said, they're not fucking genius ideas or anything, but like within these 30 fucking seconds, we don't get paid to do this. We came up with some ideas here that at least sound more fucking coherent than this bullshit.
Well, it's just the problem is, mm-hmm. again, I would never presume to be, you know, a television writer or better. Well, right. Than most of these people, granted, some of the people that wrote this episode, yeah, maybe, but, but where I take offense and where I get heated is when I feel like I'm being mocked.
Oh,
or,
yes.
Or it's right. insulting to the viewer. Yep. And this seems like it's another one of those times where Moffat kind of rides the line between, you know, proper Who and it's a children's fairy tale and time travel is magic and happy endings for everybody. And he went so far into that, like, that realm of just like, well, you know, we can kind of do whatever we want in time travel. Ha ha, who cares? And the kids are going to love it. And look, the doctor helps and saves the day. And Clara forgets everything. And everybody's happy again. Ha! And it's just like...
So, this could have been a... Okay, we're all tied up on the potential of this episode. Because it's called Journey to the Center of the TARDIS. And there were so many avenues that Moffat and team could have taken. I would have been satisfied and happy even if this was a campy episode where they just wanted to have fun. Like you said, Sean, old enemies are popping in. Let's figure out how to get rid of them. Or the center of the TARDIS is actually the doctor's dressing room with all the different, all the different gear he's worn over the years. That kind of stuff. I mean, it could have been simple. It could have been fun. But no, it's like they tried to explain things that didn't quite need explaining. It's like it's almost as if they tried to say, you know, here's a blueprint for the TARDIS. The center of the TARDIS is this is how you can build your own TARDIS. You just need a star that's in constant state of decay, and you need to have a control room, and you need to have a tree with glowing
orbs. Imagine she ran through all the like three or four of the old control rooms beyond the Eccleston control room.
That would've been great.
Imagine there were. And again, I'm sure it's budget stuff, which whatever, BBC. But imagine she runs through old episodes.
Yeah.
Like just environments or, you know, what in the show. Projections, right? The TARDIS is leaking or whatever. Mm-hmm. And suddenly she's there and in way in the distance, you don't have to have any interaction or whatever. Way in the distance, the fourth doctor's walking over a bridge.
Yeah, exactly.
Or the seventh doctor's dusting his hat off after falling to the ground or something. Like, it's just... It's not that hard.
Okay, it's not that hard. We should move on from just complaining about this episode because we have a lot of stuff to get to this week.
Yeah.
Why? I like complaining about this
episode. What rating should we give this episode, gentlemen?
We can agree, right?
Yeah. Yes.
We have understandably high standards and whatever. But when something – it's rare for – so who can misstep and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it's – it's rare for the show to misstep this badly.
Oh, God, yeah.
Where we all get riled up and spend however long we've been spending just ranting about it. Like, I feel like we find good in most episodes. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, there are, you know, there's a little bit sprinkled here and there. But I honestly cannot remember the last time an episode was this
disappointing.
And such a massive, massive letdown.
I think we all
giant
agree.
Giant reset button. Ugh.
I think we all agree.
Anyway.
Oh, sorry, Steve.
No, I just said anyway, we should move on or like
get
to our
screen. I would give it one giant reset button out of
I give it the same, one reset button out of five, Steven.
One out of five. You know what? Actually, I will give it a two because I
Mr. Positive.
yeah, Mr. Positive, I give it a two, yeah. Just because I thought it had a couple of interesting concepts. I thought the robot guy, like, was
the non-robot guy.
The non-robot guy, the brothers, like, tricking him into thinking he was a robot when he wasn't, was like a crazy interesting.
So dumb.
I thought it was a crazy interesting concept, but because it's such a fucking despicable thing that these people did.
Was super shitty. Yeah, I agree with you on that. Yeah.
But there's no payoff on it. There's no, like, the doctor doesn't like. Never steps anybody aside and says, "No, this is fucked up." Like,
you know, the minute you think about that, right? It all unravels. It all unravels.
Yes, yeah.
Like, oh, I'm an android or a cyborg, whatever. Well, that's interesting. I'm hungry. Well, that's interesting. I feel the things I touch. Oh man, I gave myself a paper cut. That's weird.
Well, whatever. Like, fucking like, and
why do I have to use the loo? This is bizarre. I'm a robot.
Whatever. Like, cyborgs. There is or.
I think
there is precedent for fiction where like robots.
I think I would be agreeing with you if the sprinkles of really interesting weren't so poorly executed and just shittily developed.
If they weren't like, shit sprinkles, is what you're saying.
Everything that was set up potentially great. The development with his relationship with Clara. By the way, when he screamed at her,
oh my God,
she said she was more afraid of him than anything on the TARDIS. That was brilliant.
Yes.
Brilliant. And guess what? Never happened.
Nothing happened with that.
No, not only did nothing happen, it was erased. She doesn't remember any of it.
Okay.
All right, anyway, let's move on before we start flipping tables. Let's move on to this week's episode, which was The Crimson Horror, written by Mr. Geddes. This episode is very interesting. Here is the quick rundown. The Doctor decides to take Clara for some reason. Unbeknownst to Clara, the Doctor has a feeling he just wants to go to Victorian London. They end up landing there, and let me rephrase that. This episode actually begins with our Scooby crew Vastra, Strax, and Jenny, and how they're kind of investigating this mysterious crimson horror that seems to be turning people into these kind of red poisonous beings. They're finding these people in gutters and sewers and so forth. So they begin to investigate. Strax, as usual, is incredibly hilarious throughout the entire episode. Jenny infiltrates the source of the crimson horror, which is what was the name of the lady, Mrs. Gillyflower?
Yes.
Mrs. Gillyflower,
played by Diana Rigg.
Yes, Lady Olena, the Queen of Thorns from Game of Thrones, for anybody who watches it.
Wait, really? Oh, really?
Yeah, that's her, yeah.
Oh, I was... when I think Diana Rigg, I think of Mrs. Peel, you know, Emma Peel from the Avengers. But
in Her Majesty's, was it in Her Majesty's Secret
Service? Her Majesty's Secret Service, yep, yes. Yep. And James Bond's wife.
Yes, James Bond's wife. And she, like I said, she is Lady Olena in Game of Thrones. Make sure you guys check it out. Anyway, so she's kind of supposedly creating this this kind of wonderful town that's going to protect people from the apocalypse.
It's a Victorian work camp, basically.
Exactly. They don't know it, but it is. It's called Sweetville, and she's working with somebody named Mr. Sweet, which we don't find out who it is until later on. Jenny infiltrates it, tries to make her way into Sweetville. They come to realize – she actually bumps into the Doctor, who is a Mrs. Gillyflower's daughter's kind of pet. Her daughter is blinded.
Also, Diana Rigg's actual daughter.
Was it really Diana Rigg's actual daughter?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, excellent.
And I believe she's a stage actress, which I think really shines through in this episode. You can really tell that she's a stage actress.
Excellent. And so Jenny comes across a doctor who has been kind of locked up thanks to Ada, I think her name was, the daughter, Gillyflower's daughter.
Something like that.
Yes, she rescues him, and the doctor had been turned into one of the red things. He starts to remember of where Clara was and the backstory, and how they landed there, trying to just kind of show her Victorian London, supposedly her first time there. And they find Clara and manage to rescue everybody, I guess you could say. They put Gillyflower's plan is to use the poison that's secreted by Mr. Sweet, who's this giant leech that's attached to her body. The plan was to to kill everybody in London, or
it was to wipe out everybody on the planet, yes, and then preserve the people that she deemed like perfect, yes, enough to survive.
Exactly. And they basically stopped. This was going to be done through a rocket that was going to be launched carrying the venom.
A lot of rockets in that old-timey London.
Yeah, exactly, right? they stop the rocket, they get the poison off the rocket, and I want to call Lady Olena for a second there. Miss Gillyflower dies, and so does the Mr. Sweet, the parasite, and that's essentially it. And at the very end, we're treated to Clara getting back to her house in modern times and finding her laptop open. And on her laptop, there's pictures of her from all the different recent adventures she's been on, and her basically the kids that she's been babysitting confront her about her time traveling. And that's essentially where we end.
why can't Who end an episode proper recently? I just anyway, we'll get to that.
Yeah. Okay.
I've got a good point to bring up.
Go ahead.
When we get to that part. Well, no, when we get to that part, when we talk about the ending.
Dolly, did you like the episode?
You know what? I liked it a lot better, a hell of a lot better, The Journey to the Center of a TARDIS. And I thought it was actually a fairly watchable episode. Diana Rigg was stellar in this kind of evil. She definitely played her character from Game of Thrones as well, which was kind of this conniving, backstabbing, evil plotter type of person.
But, really? Is that kind of the character she plays on there?
It comes off a little bit that way on the TV series. But anyways, she. When I first saw her, I immediately paused the. Because I was watching it on Amazon. And immediately paused it and looked her up online and found out it was the same person and made her much more enjoyable. but I like the episode, and I definitely always like to see the Scooby crew, I guess you could call them, whatever you want to call them. They always bring a really kind of fun aspect to it. Strax was phenomenal. Every moment with him was kind of a joy to watch on screen. And there's one part where he... When they finally infiltrate Sweetville, everybody, and Strax comes running in with a gun and blowing everybody up. And as he's blowing people away, he's laughing and giggling like a kid. It was awesome. It was perfectly done. And even when they stop, when everybody, all the, all
basically. I think Dally's losing his shit.
Yeah,
I love that he's still funny.
Exactly, exactly.
Oh, God, it would be so, so easy for them to overuse Strax and to for him to stop being funny very, very quickly. Yep. If they just with a couple of different, like, it would only take one line from him to make him become like a nuisance instead of a really great kind of joke. And it is so great to see them not screw him up yet.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so I think overall it was, they actually kind of paced it pretty well by starting off with kind of Strax, Vastra, and Jenny, and then bringing the Doctor in later. I tend to like the episodes that are a little bit more freeform in their design like this. And so, yeah, it was interesting. It was definitely better than last week's. And I just didn't like the – yeah, anything could have been better. I just didn't like the resolution to everything. And I mean more so from the point where the Doctor and Clara confront – Gillyflower. From that point on, it just completely falls apart. And even it's like a slap in the face.
I wouldn't say completely, but
well, I think this is why it falls apart to me. So feel free to jump in.
I think that's harsh.
But. Well, so they confront Gillyflower, and she rips open her shirt to to reveal A, her saggy boobs, B, the
viewers waited 30 years.
No, 30 years. No, get the hell out of here.
Viewers waited 30 years to see Emma Peel's chest, and it had to be covered in a giant leech monster.
A giant leech monster, and a cute leech monster. I gotta say, he was a cute little guy. Earthen origin, right? So there were no aliens involved in this. That was a creature that had evolved. Blah 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 blah.
And it's Silurian, yeah.
All of space and time. Let's be sure to spend 4 to 5 episodes on Earth.
Exactly. And so, they confront her, and they basically tell her that, you know, you're not going to get away with this. We're going to stop you. But she points a gun at them. But here comes Gilly out of nowhere. Or Gilly, I'm sorry. Gillyflower. Ada.
Ada?
Out of nowhere. Ada Gillyflower out of nowhere. The blind daughter comes running in and just starts beating her mom with her walking stick.
Yeah, that was great.
Meanwhile, the Doctor could have done it the entire time. He could have just stopped Gillyflower from doing anything.
But, right, like the Doctor is going to
just... Wait a minute.
Hold on. I mean, he could have easily just said, hey, you know what? I'm gonna use my sonic screwdriver and get this alien off, or this parasite off of you with one quick
shot. Wait a minute.
Shot.
No. First of all, it's ridiculous enough that the Crimson Doctor just kind of creaks his way up and sonic screwdrives that of whatever he stood in, and suddenly he was cured. Let's ignore the whatever weird-ass setting that was. Now you're saying that he has one to get the leech off her chest? Can we please come a little further away from the solving of every single problem with the screwdriver?
Well, no, but what I'm saying is he could have easily resolved that situation a lot quicker than what ended up taking place. And the part towards the very end where Gillyflower's taking Ada up the stairwell, and you know, Ada finally makes her way, gets away from her mother, and Gillyflower's leaning on the stair, or leaning on the railing there, and Strax shoots down at her, and she bounces off the rails as she's hitting, she's on her way down, and splats, which yeah, is like,
Dolly, hold on for 1 second. The main thing that you're missing here is you're saying, like, your
logic.
I mean, I'm talking about you, Dolly. Thing that you are ignoring here is that you are like, Superman can just come in and he can put his laser vision down and he'll save everybody. You're doing that to the Doctor. You're ignoring the fact that the Doctor is not omnipotent. He can't just be responsible for everything in every episode ever, because otherwise it would get boring and beyond. But B, we need those like character moments between that, the moment where Ada finally realizes what a monster her mother actually is and turns on her and just like explodes into rage like that was such a powerful moment for me personally.
Really?
To watch her like
not feel that at all.
And then their ending, their last piece of dialogue together was fantastic.
Absolutely, yeah. That whole way that relationship goes, in my opinion, is just absolutely fantastic.
Forgive me, child. Nope.
That was unbelievable.
I'm so proud of you. That's my girl.
Never.
Croak dead.
That was great. Like that
was really
so
good.
Great
it was way better than my reenactment.
I liked the way that Ada goes from this like super like demure and like
and sweet girl and
not even sweet, just like she's given all of her power away to other people and has no self-confidence in herself, but then that moment of fucking like she realizes that she's been betrayed this whole time and she just fucking turns on them, and you realize that on her mother, and you realize that this entire time she had this inner strength that she was just allowing her mother to feed on off of her this whole time was so great. And I think I forget the actress's name, but
Rachel Sterling.
Yeah, I think you really saw like the stage play sort of acting really shine through there, and in her like very loud and sort of well enunciated and sort of emotional outburst come out of nowhere like that. I absolutely loved it. And yes, Sean, your little interpretation of that last scene. Where she does that, where she says like "That's my girl" when she refuses to forgive her.
I'm so proud of you.
And it's when the Doctor just
like, wastes to Mr. Sweet.
That was pretty cool. But the Doctor's just the entire like second half of that episode. The Doctor's just kind of standing around while stuff happens around him. He's just kind of standing there as Gillyflower is, as Ada is, mauling her mother, and then.
This was not the Doctor's episode, though.
No, but it wasn't. But the Doctor has the ability to he's Gillyflower's a woman in her 60s at the very least. There's no way she's as mobile as the Doctor or anybody else in that group. And she managed to evade them the entire time.
The Doctor can barely throw a punch. Remember the victory of the Daleks when he punches the old man and he runs in and he does that like sort of puts his shoulder behind it instead of his elbow and just kind of whaps him in the face and he's like shaking his hands like, oh Christ. The Doctor's not like a physical fighter. And he's not against it. And B, he's just like fucking clumsy as shit.
But I think what kills it for me is that
Sean?
Clara grabs the chair. The Doctor grabs his. You mentioned that nothing can. We can't fix everything with the sonic screwdriver. The Doctor uses a sonic screwdriver. He grabs. He says, "I'm going to blow up this machine." Clara says, "Oh, you know what? I'm going to use a chair and just kind of bash this thing in." So there was a physical aspect that could have taken place.
Sure, but I would think that's actually a part of the whole moment with Clara, and just Clara throughout this entire episode is actually literally.
I didn't think about it.
Literally just petrifies and crystallizes everything I hate about Clara.
Yeah.
It literally just. Clara is just a kind of face that hangs out with the Doctor because the Doctor needs a companion to exist side by side with him at all times. She has no personality. Like, literally, she's a doll behind glass at one point, and it's just...
Don't you mute me.
It's just a perfect analogy for her.
I'd like to put Sean behind glass sometimes. But
I'll take that as a compliment. They put all the models behind glasses.
That's
brilliant. Attack of the supermodels.
That was a good. With that said, even though I had some issues at the end of the episode, I did enjoy it. I think the structure was worked really well. A couple of those parts got hokey to me, but it wasn't a bad episode. It was enjoyable. It was a Monster of the Week style episode with some interesting elements. Again, having Strax in there is great. And I love the dialogue he had with the horse, where the horse kind of stops and he says, "Horse, you have failed in your mission. You've managed to get us lost again." He takes his gun out ready to blow it apart and mention how it's the third horse this week that he's going to have to eat.
Oh, okay. So two things about this episode that I want to know both of your guys' opinions on. Specifically, what's up with that Tom Tom joke, yo?
Oh, I know.
what was that about? Where did that come from?
What's the other question?
Well, I think you got nothing, Sean.
Sean says his body is ready to answer this question.
Oh, hey guys, no, don't mind me. I'm just chilling. I'm just listening to you go back and forth about stuff and Doctor Who and everything. That's fine.
Well, maybe if you had like added something important to the conversation instead of like.
First of all, I've been sitting here quietly waiting. I have no idea where that old timey voice was coming from. I honestly thought that was you.
Don't make me get Dalek border to answer you.
No.
No, go ahead, Sean. I didn't know you were actually going to give a serious answer.
You guys have been back and forth for 10 minutes. I haven't had a chance to say anything.
You were saying plenty. It was so heated. Billy Flower?
Well, I mean, I was trying to agree with you at that point that we really liked the last bit of back and forth there. That was actually relatively dark for Root, I thought.
Yeah.
But I don't understand. Was there a Tauntaun joke that I missed?
Yeah. Thomas.
Thomas.
He spoke like a GPS, and then he said his name was Thomas Thomas.
Oh. And he was giving directions.
Yeah, the first thing he says is literally directions. It's just like
literally the exact
turn backwards until you can turn left. Then proceed 200 meters to your right. Everything's like that. And he's like, "What's your name?" Thomas Thomas is like,
and Strax
"You'll
says,
do well.
Thomas you'll
Thomas.
Do well."
I completely missed that. That's fantastic.
I don't know, man.
I didn't catch it until you started mentioning it, and then I thought, okay, that's a great point.
Did anybody else think that this was going to be 90%? Dr. Light, and then was pleasantly surprised when he came in around the half-hour mark?
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Yep.
I thought that the pacing on this one was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. But my second question for you guys was, did you guys think that – I'll ask Sean first.
Yes.
Jesus. Did either of you guys think, okay, Mr. Sweet is going to turn out to be the great intelligence?
Yes, I thought so.
I
said I was asking Sean first, Dally.
It's okay. This has been the nature of our whole episode recap. It's fine. You know, I was curious what they were alluding to. I didn't know if they were going to bring him back that soon, but I didn't see a chest-sucking parasite coming, so that was a neat little twist.
Chest-sucking parasite. Goddamn babies.
Honestly, I'm surprised they haven't mentioned him since the Spoonhead episode, honestly. Yeah. I think they've gone quite a while without coming back to dipping back to that mention again. They did mention him.
Yeah, they mentioned him in this episode. They mentioned him in this episode.
When?
Because his friends were like, "So how is she alive?" Because great intelligence kind of killed her.
Oh yeah, sure. I mean, but I meant like his physical appearance, not referencing something he did in a previous episode. Or I didn't.
Well,
feel
I'm
like
just saying it's pretty rare for who. I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's pretty rare for who to reference past events by name, like villains and stuff. But no, I agree with you. Is it really going to surprise anybody if he doesn't show up again in the next two episodes?
This season?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know, but overall, I thought this was really good. I thought there were a couple of nice... See, now this one's actually the opposite of the last episode. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of nice twists on the classic Who tropes.
Right? Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm gonna take this little parasite back to where it can't hurt anybody. Oh, now it's dead.
Yep. Did either of you guys catch how they did the flashback was on kind of this old timey camera?
Yeah, that was awesome.
I loved
that.
I liked that a lot.
That was good stuff. And then I liked how the doctor was kind of boned if he didn't get help, right? Like, no one knew he was there except for the blind girl and
hey,
you know.
Speaking of boning, what about Jenny, the sexy badass? Nobody? No? Oh, God.
The doctor, that made me feel gross.
So transition. Creepy
no,
guy.
But, so the doctor gets rescued by Jenny, and he just totally lays one on her, and she slaps him across the
that
face.
That was cool. That was a nice
great.
Bit.
And then I did enjoy the part where she just – they get cornered by the sexy – by the supermodels, and she kind of rips off her Victorian dress, and all of a sudden she's, you know, dressed up in leather and ready to just be a complete badass. Does some jumps
she,
and flips,
the
and then
crap out of him.
Yeah, I think she's
like,
kind of interesting.
I like
character.
Them kind of showing the Doctor being sort of a so often the Doctor is sort of passive in the romantic and sexual things that going on around him because like he's sort of this sort of almost puritanical at times, but like goofily so. And it was kind of I thought kind of interesting to see him actually. They did a little joke with him with the sonic screwdriver popping the minute Jenny took off her Victorian robes and everything. And the doctor, like, it's clearly a reference to, you know, the doctor finding her attractive in some way. And it was interesting to me to see him like have a sexual reaction to something.
Sexual innuendo, definitely, definitely. Did there was one part that I wanted to mention, but now I'm completely drawing a blank. But the that whole idea of the doctor bringing Clara back to London to almost to try to find out how she would react because
is that what was going on there?
I think so because he's
that
not quite
lying,
he has no idea what her story is yet, and so he had taken her back there to see if he would get some kind of reaction from her, and that's when that whole conversation started about you know what she's doing here and yeah. So I did kind of enjoy that, and I'm kind of curious to see how he continues to try to figure her out.
Well, speaking of people figuring things out, let's talk about the ending. So, because I got two specific things I want to say about this, but I'll let you guys talk first.
Mm-hmm. I hated it.
Hated it?
I thought it was pandering to kids. I thought it was stupid. I didn't think it made any sense, and I hated it.
Though I didn't hate it.
Well, hate's a strong word.
One thing I didn't like it because we don't know when this takes place because the Doctor and Clara travel on and off all the time, so we don't know if this takes place, a few hours after they first started traveling, or days or weeks. At the same time, it just doesn't seem to fit. It is kind of pandering. It's just that whole.
It reeks of trial. Oh well. We got to get kids in here at some point, so let's get them in the next episode.
Well, yeah, that's one of the things I want to hit on, if you don't mind if I talk, Deli.
Well, I'm going to mention one last thing about it.
I'm going to keep talking over you until you start making old man sounds. That's how it works today.
I think it was further damaging to Clara's character as a companion. All right, continue.
I don't know if it was damaging to her character so much as it just...
Sean!
You sit and you be quiet. And you wait your turn. No, but just really quick, like I don't. I. So,
did you turn to John F. Kennedy there for a second? You wait your turn, young man. We hold these truths to be self-evident.
Self-evident. Oh.
So first of all, they found an episode. They found a picture taken on a top secret nuclear submarine. Mm-hmm. First of all, I'll straight up say I'm nitpicking here.
I didn't see a camera there.
Let's even look beyond that. These kids, on a whim, go looking for their – she's a nanny, right? They're looking for the nanny.
Basically, yeah.
And what? Can use Google search to find – I don't understand. Like,
how would you search for it, right?
Oh, and then the best part is like, well, if you don't take us like time traveling or whatever, then we're totally going to tell on you. Like what adult in their right mind is going to believe that? Oh, well, she's a time traveler. Yeah, sure she is. Go to bed.
Well, okay. So these are the three things I have to say about this specifically. Specifically, I liked the kids finding the pictures specific because I mean, however they actually like whatever the fictional reason is that they found them. Well, one of them stumbled upon a picture of her at some point, and then they went looking specifically for more somehow. I thought it was a callback to episode one of the revised series where there was that guy who told Rose about the doctor who Rose went to go see.
And wasn't it a similar thing in was it the second season or third season of the series where they had the group that had been kind of had run into the doctor?
Right? Was that second season? I don't
the group? You mean
The support group where they had run into the doctor that they all had.
That the weird alien was setting
up. The Absorbalov. Love and Monsters. Absorbalov, I like that. So I thought that was that is an established thing in Doctor Who fiction, as far as I'm concerned, that the Doctor and his companions leave traces throughout time and stuff. And I thought it was interesting because this is the first time we've seen a companion actually leave traces versus the Doctor.
Sure.
The second thing I wanted to say was specifically about the kid stuff. And Sean, we had Marcus on. You weren't on during that episode 2 weeks ago.
Sorry.
And specifically, he was very insightful in a couple of things. You know, as an Englishman himself, he pointed out that in the UK, from the beginning and even to this day, Doctor Who is considered a kids' show in the United Kingdom. And that's
I'm not arguing with that. Mm-hmm. That's 100% true. Yeah.
And I think that that's why it works here. He specifically pointed out that he thought it was interesting that in America it's considered like a straight up sci-fi show, whereas that is the case over there. And the third thing, I thought this was actually the most interesting thing they've done with Clara ever, basically, other than the fact that she's constantly disappearing and reappearing at different points of time. Not the fact that she, you know, had left her traces through time, which I guess is interesting.
Sure.
But what I thought was really interesting was that it implies that she is, and something I thought that they should have explored upon a little bit more because this is the first time they've shown it, but it implies that she doesn't just live on the TARDIS with the Doctor. She goes traveling with the Doctor, and then she wants to come back and still live her regular life. She doesn't.
Sure.
She doesn't like need to be totally dependent on all of this stuff. She can live in both worlds and wants to live in both worlds, and I think that's incredibly interesting. And I think it's a problem that Dally is starting to have with the Doctor could just fix everything. He needs to be everywhere and do everything. You can learn something from Clara, Dally. that was I think that's the most interesting thing they've done with Clara thus far. A character who I believe they haven't done anything interesting with.
Exactly. You know, that the Asylum of the Daleks, I thought she was fantastic in the Snowmen. I thought she was wonderful in the
lots
Snowmen.
Of potential.
Do you
lots
think we would have a better opinion of her if they hadn't set her, like, if they hadn't started her as a mystery? Like, with an like just a normal companion just being a normal companion.
I don't even think it's that. I think it's just that she doesn't do anything in any episode from episode to episode, except for those episodes where she is a plot device. She never feels like a person.
Mm. Yeah, it's like Amy and Rory definitely were mixed up in everything, right? I mean, every episode, Amy and Rory had big roles to play. In this second half of the season, Clara is just along for the ride. She's like, you know, she's in the sidecar.
But if you think about it, she's almost along for the ride because he's dragging her.
Yeah, I don't know, though. I don't know if he's dragging her or not.
No, and I'm not saying 100%, but he is very much exerting his influence on her to make sure she's around until he figures out what's going on with her.
Absolutely, sure. But
so I think – I just think based on that you have to – at least I approach it a little differently than I would.
But the thing with – the problem with that, and I totally agree with you, that he is kind of – now, very subtly coercing her a little bit more than he usually does with most of his companions. But the problem with her character is that she doesn't react to that at all. She has no. Somehow it just feels like she doesn't even have very many lines from episode to episode. She just kind of feels like she's like an object that he's carrying around.
It's interesting. With him.
She doesn't. Yeah, she just doesn't feel like she should have be. And there are flashes of that in Journey to the Center of the TARDIS. She says that she's more afraid of the Doctor than anything else. She's
nope, she doesn't. Like, never happen.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Never happened.
But you know, in that timeline or whatever, they established that she has a reaction. She's like, okay, this is actually a little bit fucked up. And the whole thing in Hyde with the ghosts is like, you're all ghosts. We're all ghosts to you. And she has this moment where she's like, man, maybe this guy's not super awesome like I thought. But those happen like maybe once every two episodes when they should be happening like a couple times an episode. She should, if they wanted to make her the companion that questions the Doctor in a, like, questions his morality and questions his very way of life, then that'd be great. Except they don't do that with her, because I feel like they almost feel like, well, we can't make the Doctor seem too much like a bad guy or anything like that. That's too risky or whatever. But like but whenever they have a character around, but the previous episodes and previous companions that they've had, they allude to the Doctor maybe being more of a monster than a hero, with the whole "the Doctor means warrior" in other languages and stuff like that. But the tie-off there was that the companions he had with him at the times had their own personalities and did their own things. Amy and Rory were absolutely fantastic. They had their own lives outside of the Doctor. They had their own personalities. Mm-hmm. And so you could get away with only maybe mentioning that sort of thing every once in a while, because all the time in between, Amy and Rory were doing their own thing. Clara's not doing her own thing. She's just there to do the same, to fulfill the same role that a bunch of like side characters have done in the past, and nothing else.
Right. All right. Well,
that's interesting.
Two episodes left to see where they take where.
Oh, Sean, help me.
There are two episodes left to see what they do with her, if anything, before the season is over. Okay, so. Man. And then we have to.
Oh, man, isn't it? It's so great that Steven's favorite companion is going to be front and center in the 50th anniversary special, isn't it?
Well, we don't know.
I'm not a fan of Claire either. Yep. So let's.
I read somewhere. No, sorry,
go ahead. No, go ahead.
Sean.
Well, no, we're not there yet.
No, I was going to say, let's. Let's rate this. How many Crimson Slugs do you guys give this episode? Out of 5.
Sean, I'll let you go first.
4.
Whoa. Steven.
4. Yeah.
4.
It was really good.
I would give this a 5 if I liked Clara better.
Yeah, I have to go back now and rewatch these episodes with your perspective, Stephen, because I really want to see if I can see where you're coming from.
Okay.
Because I haven't noticed that at all, but that could be me being really mad about other stuff. So
I'll be interested to see if you notice that same thing as me.
I will.
Anything else to talk about, Sean? There was something you wanted to mention before we log off here.
I could have sworn I read, and you can hear that even as I talk about it, my heart sinks. I feel like I read this week that it's confirmed there are only two Doctors in the 50th anniversary.
You definitely read that, because I read the same thing.
So there's that. And I mean, it's kind of like we talked about, right? Now that that's out there, at least I can temper my expectations accordingly.
Yeah.
But still kind of a bummer.
See, I'm not... I am not bummed out about that at all.
Bummed dumb.
I don't have.
We should make that a new thing.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with there only being two Doctors. I'm fine with that.
I think I'd be more fine with it if it was just the triple. If it was Eccleston 2, I think I'd be more okay with it.
Yeah, they'd mentioned that Eccleston had been approached and they just couldn't work it out, but.
Well, I mean, we don't have to get into why. I've spent a lot of time talking about this, and I'm sure we'll spend more time in the future. But I just thought that was interesting that they finally confirmed that, so we can kind of move forward with that knowledge and then see how it goes. I haven't seen any other leaks. I haven't seen any pictures. I haven't seen any kind of hints or anything. So
the only thing I had seen were just some of the callbacks to the.
Right.
You know, so the previous episode, The Unearthly Child, and things like that, which is kind of cool. Just interesting things. Although there is one kind of cool thing to mention, and that's Toys R Us is helping celebrate the 50th anniversary, and they're releasing these like dual pack TARDIS / Doctor limited edition twin packs. So you have all 11 incarnations of the Doctor, but you know, it has a version of the Dalek that was around at that time, so it's kind of a neat idea. I'll have to send the
Toys R Us has these?
Toys R Us, yeah, surprising.
Send that link around, yeah,
for sure. It was up on Blog to Who, but I guess it may just be the UK only, but regardless, you know, I'm sure you'll be able to purchase them online. It starts May 1st, so it's already started.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So they're about $30, I'd say, somewhere around there. But it's totally worth it.
Each pack?
Each 5-inch action figure. So it's a 5-inch Doctor and a 5-inch Dalek. But the
$30 each times 11.
Oh, times 11 is, yeah, it's doable. $330.
Maybe we each get a couple, and then
we can just trade them
for one. Yeah, right. We each get them for a couple months, and then we ship them to each other across the country.
We just tell each other that when we trade them, we just say that they've regenerated, and that's why. They're
oh, there you go. There you go.
Cool. Yeah. The only other thing I guess it's not safe to talk about, but I read some interesting stuff about the finale.
Oh,
I think
yeah,
I told
yeah.
you this, Steven, about a certain character that's going to appear.
Sure.
Yeah, we'll hold off on that just so we don't spoil.
We'll hold off, but am I going to have some heated opinions about that?
Because I read about that as well, but we won't spoil
Sean's
it for anybody.
Burning
but,
up.
With that said, let's log off here. Definitely want to thank everybody for joining us. A great episode. You knocked an hour out for this wonderful.
Thank you.
We were joined by old men.
Thank you, Miss Skelly Flower.
Yeah,
John Rigg does not talk like that at all.
No. With that said, you can find us at Lonely TARDIS on Twitter. You can find us on iTunes. Please rate and review us. It always helps. We've been getting some great reviews and ratings great feedback on Twitter, actually. And we didn't get a chance to mention some of the comments this week because we ran out of time, but we will next week. And you can find us personally. You can find me at Cool Rats, KEWLRATS. You can find Sean
at Sean Norton, SHJUNNORTON.
This is on Twitter, mind you. You can find Steven
at the corner store.
Yeah. At Steven Strum, STEVENSTROM.
And again, you can find us at Lonely TARDIS on the Twitters. And we will see you all next time.
Clara!